Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, I don't know about you, listeners, but I am exhausted after day 10 of Roland Garros. 2021. Not too exhausted to do some rudimentary maths, though. Thank you very much. Day 10 of Roland Garros was a little bit bizarre in places. It entertained massively, but not quite in the places that I was expecting it to entertain as thrillingly as it did, which is to say that Medvedev versus Tsitsipas disappointed on the aggro front, but other matches made up for it. Not on the aggro front at all. I've been shortchanged massively, and nothing can possibly fully make up for that. But due to other events occurring, it was a good day nonetheless. Is that cryptic enough for everybody that doesn't know what happened exactly today at Roland Garros? There were basically two brilliant women's quarterfinals, one dud of a men's quarterfinal, and one decent men's quarterfinal, but that I had such high expectations for, I feel robbed by. Am I being unreasonable?
In normal circumstances, with normal people, yes, you are being unfair. But I mean, I know how much that match meant to you on paper, so I understand it. I mean, I actually really enjoyed it. I just feel like it had so much more to give, but it didn't quite get there.
Shall we get into the lack of aggro straight away? Because
yes, please.
I mean, I've thought for a while that those two have rowed back from their bullshit Russian aggro of Miami a few years ago. And this was, I think, the greatest evidence yet, because there were opportunities, as David said, for there to be aggro, and Tsitsipas didn't take the bait. And I'm just not sure we're going to see that much aggro from them going forward. And actually,
Actually,
Medvedev has just been in his press conference and said, I don't think we're going to have that many more fights because...
Yeah, nonsense.
Because actually, he framed it quite interestingly. He said, I would like to. I think it would be great. I think it's a pity that we don't. It would be more fun if we did. But he actually spoke
a hero of our times.
He actually spoke about how men's tennis in the big three era has become gentlemanly. And he is worried that if there's too much aggro, that will be frowned upon and people won't like it. I'm here to tell him that is not the case. And we are here for the aggro, Daniil Medvedev. But it's interesting that he's thinking like that.
Brilliant.
Yeah, he was really trying to start something tonight, and I applaud him and thank him for that. And Tsitsipas wasn't having any of it. It was like he didn't even notice. But he did notice, didn't he? He was just trying to be a grown up.
There were a couple of moments when he nearly turned, when Medvedev had a go about something, and I saw this eye roll from Tsitsipas, and I thought, oh, well, here we go. He's getting him wound up here. But the thing is, let's not forget that the aggro that happened, the one that we all remember, happened when Tsitsipas lost. And the difference is he was in charge of this. And he was, there was no need for him to get upset. He didn't get upset because he was playing brilliantly. And there were some moments for Medvedev that I thought, well, he certainly should have had a set, at least a set. But yeah, Tsitsipas felt confident on that surface. Obviously, he got off to a great start. That helps. But it's the surface. It's the game is perfectly suited to it.
Yeah, I agree. It, just a stunning tennis performance from Tsitsipas. You know, my interest in that is minimal. Let's get back to the aggro. It struck me as the Tsitsipas. Do you think his dad had a talk with him before that match and said, Stefanos, I don't care what he says or what he tries to drag you into, you be the bigger man. You know, like as if he was, you know, popping the jumper and beret on his son before heading off to school. Don't respond to the bullies. You rise above. You be the bigger person. Well,
that would be very sensible if he did, wouldn't it? And I mean, personally, I loved the tennis match, and I enjoyed the fun and games as well. But I loved watching the rawness and the purity of the tennis that they produced. I thought Medvedev was disappointing at the start, but wow, he got back into it. And he went from, a breakdown in the second set, was in charge, had set points, should have taken them. It was really weird the way he took his foot off the gas when he was in front in that set. And again in the third set, he had his chances and he just seemed to go back into his shell when he was ahead in sets. But I just love the rally construction of those two. I love the way they're so different, but it makes for the most wonderful spectacle for me as somebody who loves watching tennis.
I really enjoyed the match. As you said, it felt like more than the straight set win. You know, it felt like there was a real tussle, certainly in those last two sets. I think we saw the way Clay helps Tsitsipas in that matchup, the way he's able to get Medvedev moving. I think Jim Courier on Tennis Channel was apparently talking a lot about how Medvedev was struggling to move to his backhand side, Tsitsipas pushing him off the court with those angles of his shots. And yet Medvedev did what Medvedev does best, which is a tactical shift mid-match. He completely changed his approach and started being so much more aggressive and using the drop shot. The backhand drop shot won him so many points today, and he started coming forward, finishing points at the net. And it, as David said, it got him in a position to win that second set when he had the set points. I think one of them, there was a net cord, which Tsitsipas got a bit lucky with, and one of them, Medvedev, missed the second serve return, which was disappointing for sure. But, you know, ultimately, I look at that match on clay and I just think Tsitsipas is able to sustain what he does for longer on clay, and it's easier for him. The surface, it was a good day for people who would want surface variety in tennis, because this was a totally different feel to when they played in Australia. The clay makes a massive difference when these two match up against each other.
He did feel just completely in command throughout, didn't he? It was such, not just on the reluctance to engage in aggro, but in every way tonight, it felt like such a mature performance from Stefanos Tsitsipas. So often in the meetings between these two, Medvedev has made Tsitsipas look like a little boy, look definitely his junior. And I know that there is a couple of years age gap, but I felt like it was, the reverse was the case today. Tsitsipas so adult somehow and so in control. And yeah, Medvedev, it was the most exposed I've seen his movement on this surface. I suddenly became aware that he was really uncomfortable sliding. Whereas earlier in the week, I'd had a couple of moments of going, oh, Medvedev sliding. But they were in sort of completely different situations where he had lots of time to make up his mind what he wanted to do with the ball, sort of sliding on his own terms, like, oh, I've got a bit of time, I'll have a go at a bit of a slide here, rather than being dragged into really uncomfortable positions by Tsitsipas as he was so often today, and not being comfortable and light enough on his feet on this particular surface to maximize his defensive skills, I suppose. There were a few just gasp inducing shots that Medvedev produced to contribute to the overall entertainment factor of the match, and I am continually stunned by how some of those shots that he hit when he's dragged up to the net by a Tsitsipas drop shot, those low backhands he hits, I think they defy physics.
Yeah.
Because there's no spin on them at all. And yet sometimes he hits them from below the net and they obviously traverse the net and land on the other side. How does it happen?
I don't know anybody else who does that. I think probably the closest to it is Djokovic, but he will often use his own hands in a feathering, slicey kind of way, whereas, yeah, Medvedev just has a full swing at the thing. and he makes it so often. He's really something. The funny thing is the movement is compromised in the normal rallying process. But when he's then dragged into the base, into the net, or has to rush back for a lob, he covers the ground so well.
Mm.
Yes. Are you thinking of the tweener lob that he hit, David, when he rushed back?
I'll always be thinking about the tweener lob that he hit.
Just
got to be one of the best I've ever seen in a big match.
Unbelievable. And then he finished it off with a sort of no-holds-barred smash as well, which I thought was tremendous.
We have to talk, don't we, about...
I can't believe it's taken 11 minutes.
Underarm serve and volley on match point. I mean, obviously, truly dreadful decision.
Yeah, another beauty where the camera can't quite keep up.
I really hope this doesn't set the underarm serve back many years.
I think it might set the underarm serve and volley back to where it belongs.
I've never seen that before.
That was never a thing. He just invented that.
Yeah, see, I think that's where he fell down. I think underarm serve match point, fine. It still might not have panned out, but it wouldn't have looked silly. It was the charge to the net that looked truly absurd. It looked like a tank, didn't it? I mean, it wasn't, obviously. It was just a frivolous moment.
But... I mean, he insists it was tactical and he was looking to do it throughout the match. And he saw that Tsitsipas
was... he thought, it's now or never.
And he saw that Tsitsipas was far back and thought, I'm going to go for it. But interestingly, Tsitsipas said, I saw him stop and look like he was going to do something. And I completely read it. And he was there so early and was able to hit a topspin backhand winner. But yeah, it looked like a sort of surrender, didn't it? But he insists it wasn't.
There was just a wonderfully classic of the genre, uncomfortable Tsitsipas interview on court after the match with Cedric Pierlein. I mean, those interviews to absolutely nobody that are being translated apparently for absolutely nobody are just enjoyable for absolutely nobody, Stefanos Tsitsipas included, and probably Cedric Pierlein also. But it was excruciating, wasn't it?
It was, and actually, the funny thing is, I thought as well on match point, once Tsitsipas had hit his winner, the glee in his face, and because it was so kind of raw in its joy in an empty stadium, when he's turning around to just a few people, and he's roaring at the top of his lungs, and he's so happy, and it all felt a bit awkward to me, you know, because Medvedev's having to wait for him and, you know, sort of stomping forward in a bit of a sulk, and then goes around the net and then the interview. And there was a bit of me that just thought, oh, just get it all over with, for God's sake. This is excruciating. But
Well, Tsitsipas did get it all over with. He ended the interview for Cedric Pierlein, didn't he? He said, and finally, yes, I want to rest or something. Bye. Good night, Perry.
Very good.
Very subtle hinting there, Stefanos, well done. So Tsitsipas through to the semi-finals, where he will face Alexander Zverev, because Zverev beat a physically depleted Alejandro Davidovich Fokina today, also in straight sets, but a completely different straight sets match. Not to say that there weren't glimpses of this being competitive, there absolutely were, but for me, I think it's as simple as Davidovich Fokina had to win the first set.
Yeah, totally.
And he didn't, and then it was over.
I read that he couldn't put his socks on after he'd beaten Del Bonis.
Ow.
He was that physically hurting. So that's my read on this match. He was just physically spent. I think he'd exerted so much energy through the first few rounds. And absolutely, the only chance he had was winning this match in straight sets. And as soon as he lost that first set, all the energy just went out of him. And it was a rout from that point, and just not a contest, really. Just a dud of a match, really.
Did he still manage to put the right socks on? And by that, I mean the wrong socks?
Yes, I should clarify. He was struggling to put his odd socks on.
And we still haven't got to the bottom of that.
No. I didn't get time to ask him that. It was third on my list of very important questions. Underarm serve, pet adoption agency, odd socks.
Do you think when he's sorting through his washing, at that stage he pairs them up in odd pairs to put them away in the drawer? Or do you think he pairs them up correctly as matching pairs and then selects one from each of two pairs when putting them on his feet in the morning? That would be a barnstormer of a press conference question, wouldn't it? That would reignite the row about the pointlessness of press conferences.
I mean, I have an image of tennis players being really messy in their hotel rooms.
Oh, so hang on. You think there's just...
I think it's just socks
a repository
everywhere.
Of socks in the corner.
And he's just picking them.
Do you know, I once went into, this is a terrible name drop, I once went into Mats Wilander's hotel room back in the late 90s.
Definitely how all good stories start, I think.
And we walked in because it'd been a bit of a night in the bar, the Champions Tour, you know, and we went back into this, not just me and him, it was like loads of people. We went in and I walked in and I went, oh no! And they were like, what? I said, somebody's broken in. And I genuinely meant it. But it was just and he's like, no, they haven't.
Is that really true?
Yeah. Yeah. And he had a hotel room overlooking a sort of Doha Bay kind of, you know, like, a seaside location, and he put down a golf ball and smashed this golf ball into the sea from his balcony. Very entertaining.
The life you have led, David.
It's a long time ago.
Goodness me.
He's very tidy now.
We were on socks before we got to that.
You started it.
Davidovich Fokina. It was part of Zverev's tactic, wasn't it, in the first set to exploit that fatigue in Davidovich Fokina and draw everything he had to give out of him in that first set to kind of put all the nails in the coffin. And it looked a bit weird. It didn't make for the most entertaining match, but ultimately a successful tactic, I suppose.
Yeah. It's quite interesting watching that contest between those two, because I do feel like Zverev looks at players like him and other younger players than him and also Nishikori yesterday, a certain type of player, and he thinks he can just have his way against these people. They're not no threats. I think he puts Davidovich Fokina in a similar box to Nishikori, and there are certain similarities, I think, in their games. I do feel that ADF, I'll just shorten him a bit. He's going to have his day, that guy, because he's spectacular, isn't he? He really goes for it. I didn't realise he was quite as explosive as he is. And that's two really heavy defeats to Zverev, who I think him and Tsitsipas this time, I think, could be a belter of a match.
Just quickly on Fokina, I think he needs to improve his serve. I really think his serve might be the thing that holds him back. Look, I'm not expecting him to be a sort of mainstay of the top 10 or anything like that, but I think he can have runs, as you said, and have his day. But I think his serve is going to hold him back. He just gets broken a lot. He doesn't win many free points of it, and Zverev just was all over it.
5-2 in Tsitsipas's favour is the head-to-head with Zverev. Tsitsipas won their only meeting on clay. That was in Madrid in 2019. Zverev won their last meeting, which, of course, was this year in the Acapulco final. What do we think? Zverev's going to be fresh, which
is big, isn't it?
Which he never is when he gets to this stage of a slam. Tsitsipas obviously the favourite, and nothing's really changed for me since that draw came out, and he was the favourite to reach the final from the bottom half. I mean, that absolutely remains the case, if not even more so, having seen how he's played over the course of five matches. But from what we've seen of Zverev, does he have a realistic chance in that match, do we think?
I think he has a realistic chance, yes. But I think Tsitsipas wins. I think in probably four sets, I think he's a better, more well-rounded clay court player, especially. Zverev's never beaten a top 10 player at a slam.
That's amazing.
Which
I didn't know that.
Is mind-boggling when you think how long he's been in the top 10, how many slams he's played. And I think in those big matches, the top players can separate themselves from him. And I think Tsitsipas will do that.
Zverev looks better to me, sorry, Catherine, than I expected him to look at this stage. So I think it will be close. But I still think Tsitsipas has just got so much better this year on clay.
There's no chinks, are there? There's no lapses in concentration. He's just business.
He's got everything. And did you notice the way he was using his slice today to kind of just blunt Medvedev early on? He was stopping him, pushing him around by just floating.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let's move on from that dud and talk about the two women's singles quarterfinals that we witnessed today, which were pure spectacular joy. One was won by Tamara Zidanšek, 8-6 in the third over Paula Badosa, and one was won by Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova, 9-7. In the third, over Elena Rybakina. Which would we like to talk about first? Which was the better match? Maybe I'll put you on the spot with that. Which of the two was the better match?
I think the first one, Badosa and Zidanšek, was the better match, I think. But they were really similar. They were both epics. They were both having good spells of play on either side of the net. It was what it meant to them all that will stay with me. these are four players that have never been to a Grand Slam semi-final, and to watch them living on their nerves the way they were in all different ways to, well, three real newcomers who just haven't been on this sort of stage before, and then a player like Pavlyuchenkova who's got all that scar tissue, and she's had all those occasions where she hasn't managed to break through the final barrier to a semi-final, and here she was, and she managed it, you know. I thought it was a wonderful sporting afternoon in that way. It was everything that sport is when it's high stakes, when it's the highest stakes, and it's their whole careers lead into this sort of moment. And, you know, I felt like I was holding my breath watching both of those matches.
I didn't even follow Tamara Zidanshek, on Twitter until today. You know, she wasn't a prominent enough feature of my tennis life that I felt like I needed to be abreast of everything she had to say for herself publicly.
She's the one who handled it all the best, I thought, out of the four.
Yeah, I
found that match so intriguing because it was an extremely close contest. They were so evenly matched as players that it really did feel like it all came down to who handled that occasion and that pressure, because everyone knew this was a massive opportunity. We knew it, fans knew it, and most importantly, they knew it and they felt it. And Badosa was incredibly honest in her press conference afterwards, just saying, "I didn't know how to handle the nerves today and they inhibited my game." And I think she loaded herself up with pressure and expectation, which I think actually she'd been doing all tournament and had handled it very well. But just on this occasion, it got the better of her. Look, there were patches where she played wonderfully, for sure. But as an overall contest, I agree with David. I think Zidanshek was the more solid, the more secure, and there was a game in the final set, a 6-6 game, where she was serving Zidanshek, and she saved three break points, with all of them with winners, two with forehand winners, one with a backhand winner, which did take a little bit of a lucky bounce. And she just said, "I was fighting for my life in that game." And you could see it. It was great, great sport, great spectacle. And I didn't realize she had such a potent forehand. I think she hit more forehand winners than Badosa today, who's the one whose forehand has sort of stuck out all tournament. I was so impressed by Zidanshek, the way she handled the occasion.
She is the world number 86. She'd never been past the third round of a slam before this one. Some quotes from her after the match, this from the WTA Insider. Last week she said, "My career has always been progressing slowly and slowly, like building a house. It was never like I was 16 years old and I just did one result." The follow-up question was, "If your career was a house, what kind of house would it be?" And Zidanshek said, "The Burj Khalifa, it's the highest building."
Great answer.
It's great, isn't it?
By the way, I something that's just struck me is I think one of the first tweets of the day from the wonderful Hannah on our account was observing the Zidanshek support team backstage in the gym, all messing about, having a laugh before the match in this incredibly important, tense occasion. And yet they were keeping it light. And I wonder whether that helped. Because she was, okay, Badosa put her under pressure, but she handled it really well.
And I was really struck at the end of the match with something that often strikes me about tennis, about just what a cruel sport it is. You know, just in basic maths, 128 players in the draw, 127 of them end up losing. And Badosa has had a brilliant week, you know, the best run of her career in a slam. And she said, "This is the best result of my career, and it's the loss that hurts the most." I mean, that juxtaposition is so stark in tennis. She's had a brilliant week, and yet she's left feeling with this horrible feeling in her stomach. And I just thought that was just a look at what tennis can be like. You know, it's tough.
How about the story of Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova, though, who finally, after seven failed attempts at the quarterfinal stage, has reached a Grand Slam semifinal? And that's seven attempts just in singles, isn't it? She's had plenty more in doubles as well, and always fallen at the quarterfinal stage there too. That's a heck of a story from Pavlyuchenkova. She's completely changed her own narrative, because she was the underachiever. She was the, quote, perennial Grand Slam quarterfinalist. That is what people of this parish called her ahead of her match against Sabalenka, which we were pitching as a banana skin for Sabalenka, and it absolutely was, as it transpired. And she's just changed her story today. It could so easily, just but for a couple of points, have been, you know, same old thing for Pavlyuchenkova. And it wouldn't have changed much. Nobody would have said, God, that's a terrible loss for her. She should be winning that. It wouldn't have altered how people viewed her negatively. But what she's done today,
I thought it would be as well,
completely alters it for the positive.
Yeah, I've very much expected Rebecca to end up winning because she didn't have all the mental scar tissue. And I regard that win for Pavlyuchenkova as one of the achievements of the tennis year. And I think it will remain that, regardless of whether she goes any further, regardless of what else happens, because just on a personal level, I can't imagine what that must be like, to get to the brink of something that many times, not get over the line, and be faced with it again. To look down the barrel at what's happened so many times before and not gone right, and to still get over the line, I think that is a magnificent achievement for her. Just on a personal level, I'm really, really chuffed for her and really impressed with it. Because I'm sure I would bottle it. Amazing.
Both Pavlyuchenkova and Zidanshek today spoke about the importance of having a sports psychologist in their team. Oh. You know, teams are very limited at the moment, and yet Zidanshek has travelled with her sports psychologist. And I think Pavlyuchenkova understands her own game and how to use it, I think, better than ever. She said she's had some runs to quarterfinals in the past where people have been telling her that she's a really dangerous opponent and she belongs there, but she's never really felt it. You know, she's not left those weeks feeling good about her game or feeling confident about her game. But I think now she really does. She understands how to deploy what she's got. She feels more in control on the court. And goodness me, she has beaten some incredible players en route to this semi-final. You know, Sabalenka, Azarenka, Rybakina. Those are heavy, heavy hitters. And she has gone toe-to-toe with them and come out on top. Gosh, it's an incredibly impressive run, especially, as you say, in light of all the near misses in the past.
One of Zidanshek and Pavlyuchenkova is going to be a Grand Slam finalist. An extraordinary story. And now
that hadn't really dawned on me.
Yeah, and now Pavlyuchenkova and Rybakina will team up in the women's doubles quarterfinals tomorrow.
Goodness.
Mm.
By the way, do you know one thing that has occurred to me about Pavlyuchenkova is that she used to be regarded as one of the biggest hitters in the sport 10 years ago. I mean, she still hits a big ball, don't get me wrong, but you've just reeled off some of the players she's beaten, and it occurred to me that Jim Courier and Mats Wilander once had a chat, I think maybe in commentary or broadcasting or something. I don't think it was off air. And they were talking about how they reached a stage in their careers when they found themselves up against somebody who suddenly hit harder than themselves, and that it was a shock to the system. But they found another way on that day to win, and how satisfying it was. And in Courier's case, he said, I played Marat Safin in the Davis Cup when he was sort of 19, and I'm supposed to be this big hitting baseline, and he was knocking me off the court, and I ended up slicing, dicing him for an hour, and ended up getting a comeback, and he remembers it very fondly as a result. And I suspect Pavlyuchenkova has just added elements to a game, and as you said, understands her own game so much that she's found a way around these players because she can't necessarily go through them.
Mm-hmm. And it's a very different challenge against Zidanšek, you know, who is someone who has power but isn't all about power, and actually says that one of her tactics is to confuse her opponents. And
wow,
you know, she's a real thinker and a tactician on the court, and it's just going to be a totally different match for Pavlyuchenkova than the ones she's had recently.
Mm. Just going back to the mental coaches, there were some tremendous gifs and clips doing the round of Zidanšek's mental coach, whose name I'm afraid I don't know, doing the mark of the cross, sort of every time she hit an ace or saved a break point. It was tremendous. Mm. He was, yeah.
All that mental coaching, but sometimes
you just need
a higher power.
Pavlyuchenkova and Rybakina will team up in the women's doubles quarterfinals tomorrow. We had two women's doubles quarterfinals today, and they were won by Barbora Krejčíková and Katerina Siniaková over the Pliskova sisters. So it will be Krejčíková and Siniaková against Bethany Mattek-Sands and Iga Świątek.
Oh, when's that
in the women's doubles semi-finals? David, that it'll be Thursday.
Okay.
Mattek-Sands and Świątek beat Jurak and Klipac today, 3-2. So Świątek's still on for the double. Krejčíková, I think, is still on for the triple.
No, they lost. They lost in the mixed.
Balls.
Hmm.
Okay, well, they're both still on for the double then.
Yes.
It's a cleaner stat. Okay, fine. Incidentally, in still on for the mixed is Aslan Karatsev of unexpected doubles success.
Yeah, with Alina Vesnina, who hit him in the back with a serve today.
Yeah.
I mean,
everything about that is unexpected. Yeah.
There's a lot of back there to hit. Did you get a couple in the calves as well?
For some reason, it really surprised me that Aslan Karatsev is playing doubles. I don't know.
Everything about Aslan Karatsev surprises me.
Yeah.
She's running that doubles team, isn't she?
Yeah, I would have thought so. They will play Desiree Kravchik and Joe Salisbury in the mixed doubles final. They got a walkover today. Juliana Olmos and Juan Sebastian Cabal withdrew ahead of that semi-final. So that'll be the mixed doubles final. In terms of the men's doubles quarterfinals, we had two of those today. Juan Sebastian Cabal, Robert Farah, they won through against Kevin Kravitz and Horia Takao, 7-5 in the third. And, the fairy tale is on. Pierre-Hugues-Bert, Nicolas Mahut, 7-6-6-1 today in their quarterfinal over Tomislav Brukic. Struggling with the lack of vowels in that name. It's difficult for a lowly English person to pronounce. And Nikola Kacic. So Pierre-Hugues-Bert, Nicolas Mahut are through. Matt, can I announce your big news?
Please do. This is the best thing that's ever been said about me, but I must say I don't see it, but
well,
I'm happy about it.
I'm sat watching Medvedev Tsitsipas with my parents tonight, struggling to hide my disappointment. My dad has clearly lost interest altogether because out of nowhere he says, do you see the resemblance, Kathy, between Matt and Pierre-Hugues-Bert?
Your answer?
I didn't commit either way. I
mean, I've never seen him in the same room.
Well, we've bought you the shirt now as well, so. Yeah. Anyway, he stated it several times. He's committed to it, Matt.
I think he's onto something.
Mm. All I can say is thank you.
Mm. So, how about tomorrow then? Court Philippe Chatrier, Coco Gauff against Barbora Krejčíková. Then it's Maria Sakkari up against Iga Świątek. Then it's Rafael Nadal against Diego Schwartzman. And then in the night session, the final night session match of the tournament, and the only one that will feature a crowd, it'll be Novak Djokovic against Matteo Berrettini. Which of those matches is most likely to feature an upset of the four?
What's the upset result in Goff Krejcikova? Or is that
seedings-wise, it's Krejcikova. Because Goff is the 24th seed and Krejcikova is unseeded.
Probably that one then, I would say. I think Goff will win, I think if I had to predict that, I would go Goff, but I think that's the most likely. I mean, yeah, you've got two of the big three there, and you've got Iga Świątek, the defending champion, beating everyone.
I mean, I'm interested to see if Maria Sakkari could have a good day, what that would end up looking like, because I think she is dangerous. I still think Świątek's just a better player. I mean, she's better than everybody in the draw on the surface. Mm. But I think Sakkari, if she came out firing, you know, it only takes Świątek to be just off a bit for it to be very close.
Mm, we've seen her off a bit, though, and she still wins in straight sets.
Yeah. I never think she's that off, though, to be honest.
I thought her forehand was pretty wayward the other night against Kostyuk. When was that? That was last night, wasn't it? Goodness me, it's been a long day. I thought that was not a great night for Świątek, and she won 3 and 4.
I think that night match could be good. With the crowd, you know, and if Berrettini gets into it, I think he could make it close-ish.
Wow. There we go. Get the people tuning in, David.
I think it could be one set all before Djokovic accelerates away.
Right.
That unexpectedly starts an hour earlier tomorrow. In fact, the whole day is shifted an hour earlier.
Why is it?
I don't know. Is it because there's still a curfew, but it's a much later curfew?
Yes, I believe there is still a curfew. So the curfew is 2 hours later. So hang on. It has been possible all along to move the night sessions forward.
Well, it's certainly a good idea. Was that always the plan, I wonder? This time slot?
I don't know, but my mind is blown. There we go. Anyway, it's a good idea. So that is your tennis tomorrow to look forward to. We'll be back with another tennis podcast, of course. I just wanted to flag one last thing. We don't have time to deep dive on it now, although I'm sure we will at another stage. The most extraordinary article dropped today by a first person piece by Taylor Townsend on the Players Tribune website. It's a harrowing, uplifting, startling account of her career from infancy until now. And she is an interesting, fascinating woman whose story is brilliantly told in the first person and needs to be heard, I think. I would urge everybody, it's very long, so carve out some time in your day, but I would urge everybody to take the time to try and read that, because it's astonishing, really. It's an astonishing account of her career. So I just wanted to flag that.
I think you've put that in the newsletter, haven't you, Matt? A link to that. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but yeah, I must read it.
Yeah, it completely stopped me in my tracks. It is beautifully written, powerful, important, on race, on body image, on tennis's relationship with those topics. It is essential reading, and it's stop this podcast and go and read it.
Yeah, let's wrap this thing up. Let's apologize to our mascots first and foremost. All three of us picked duds today. We're all close, David, because all the matches were so close that we picked. We're at the stage of the tournament where we pick scores as well as winners. And that presented difficulties for all of us today. So apologies to Zeus. It's Scouse or Mousel and Rogue, we ride again tomorrow. Billie Jean is alongside me. She says a big, tired hello to Billie Jean King. Phoebe is our lovely corgi mascot for the tournament. Hello, Phoebe. And Lucci, of course, as well, posthumously. And we have Chris Albert Lee, who's our executive producer. And we have shout outs, Matt. Who are they for?
They are for Alec Mills.
Right, Alec.
Hello, Alec. A little bit like Alan Mills.
I was going to say the same thing. Who, if you remember, Catherine, we sat and adjudicated our end of season awards with once, didn't we?
I do remember.
He was lovely.
He was very lovely. Yeah. There we go. I did a tennis related name comparison for once. Well done, me.
Thanks, Alan.
Thank you.
No, Alec.
Oh, God. Thanks, Alec.
We've got Richard Clark.
Hello, yes, Richard. You used to get all my school shoes from Clark's.
Same.
Classic.
Very reliable.
Yeah, absolutely. Solid. You know what you're getting.
My best mate's Richard. What can I say? And I quite like Richard Clark, so cheers, Richard.
Thank you very much, Richard.
And last one today is Rosie Fine.
Oh, hello.
Oh,
Rosie. So Billie Jean is by my left elbow and Rosie is by my left foot.
And they've been adopting the sort of roles of Billie Jean as Medvedev trying to harass Rosie Tsitsipas today. We've seen video evidence of it. And Rosie, like Tsitsipas, wasn't rising to it.
No.
And thank you, Rosie, for your support.
Yes. Thank you, Rosie Fine, for your support. That is a glorious name. Thank you for listening. Subscribe to your newsletter. To subscribe to our newsletter, please. and your own, if you have one of those too. But most importantly, subscribe to ours. And there's a cracking sort of Pavlyuchenko-y flavoured stat in there today. It's sensational. It's worth subscribing for that alone. But there's an awful lot of other great stuff in there as well. Follow us on Twitter. Hannah is just doing a marvellous job. Tell your friends, leave us an Apple Podcast review. Keep listening, and we'll speak to you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.